Welcome back to Left Out. This is Left Out on WRCT FM. We've been just a moment ago, we finished a conversation with Dr. Richard Garwin, who's written a very interesting book entitled Megawatts and Megatons. We were talking about nuclear power, nuclear energy with Dr. Garwin. You're welcome to call us if you would like at 412-621-9728 or 89728 on campus. And we also monitor electronic mail. You could send mail to bob@leftout.info. For our next topic, I wanted to start out and turn our attention a little bit to contemporary politics. You'll be surprised to know that. I wanted to point out a few articles I've been reading recently that may be of interest to some of our listeners. One is in the current issue of The Nation. Many of our listeners, I'm sure, read The Nation at least from time to time. There's an interesting book review, review of two books, in fact, by a fellow named Anatole Levin, L-I-E-V-E-N, I think that may be how you pronounce it, who is a senior associate at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace in Washington. And he has an essay in this in the current issue of The Nation and reviewing a book by George Packer called The Fight is for Democracy, Winning the War of Ideas in America and the World. And another book by Ronald Asmus called Progressive Internationalism, A Democratic National Security Strategy. But the review is really an excerpt from a book coming up being written by Anatole Levin, called America, Right or Wrong, An Anatomy of American Nationalism, which will be published by Oxford University Press. So it's quite an interesting article. It gives an analysis of the whole business with the Iraq War, and really the whole business with the so-called war on terrorism, and in particular our policies in the Middle East. And he has a number of points to raise, and I think I, for the most part, I'd like to just encourage our listeners to have a look at the article. But I wanted to mention read one paragraph from this article, which I think has an interesting point of view that I wanted to call your attention to. So he's referring to the handling of the 9/11 attacks in the United States about 3 years ago or so, and how the Bush administration handled these attacks. And he has a comment. It's in the context of a much lengthier discussion, but I think this can be excerpted meaningfully. And it goes as follows. He says, "Given the threat posed by al-Qaeda and its Sunni extremist allies to virtually every state and elite in the Muslim world, and given the savage division between these forces, the Shiite tradition and secular Arab nationalists like the Ba'ath, there was a cornucopia of opportunities after September 11th to seek Muslim allies in the war on terrorism. From this point of view, for the Bush administration to have succeeded in uniting Shiite radicals, Ba'ath diehards, and Sunni extremists in Iraq, to have invaded Afghanistan and Iraq while simultaneously threatening Iran and Syria, and to have alienated both Turkey and Saudi Arabia, this almost defies description. It's a kind of Baroque apotheosis of geopolitical cretinism." So this is an interesting, apart from the acerbic phrasing, it's an interesting point, which is it is quite remarkable the ham-handed way in which the Bush administration has gone about this by consolidating all sorts of really unrelated issues under the rubric of the war on terror, not to mention the axis of evil.
I have a question about the article. I haven't read it yet myself.
But, I cannot hear you.
What did he say about those books? What kind of books are those books that talk about? What are they? You mentioned the two books he's reviewing.
Right. Well, one of the books is a kind of a right wing neocon point of view, and the other is a sort of a left wing progressive point of view on international affairs, in particular the war on terrorism,
okay,
and Middle East politics. And he uses both of those as a kind of fulcrum for his discussion, which is extensive and actually quite interesting. So I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. When is the book coming out?
I'm looking
out?
For.
Is
it I don't know when, yeah, it's expected. This month. It says it's to be published this month in Oxford University Press, so I think we'll look forward to seeing that come out. But that's an interesting that is an interesting point. And we've touched on this sometimes in Left Out, and I think you may have read about it or heard about similar point of view expressed elsewhere. Is this consolidation and how unreasonable and irrational this consolidation of such disparate elements under this one, you know, overarching war on terror? It just seems counterproductive to any of our aims.
You're talking about the rhetoric of the war on terror, but yeah. I think maybe partly what he's talking about is not just the American rhetoric that they feed to the U.S. media and the U.S. population, but what they've done.
But also
the alignment of all these groups that against the U.S., which are not aligned at all. They were not aligned before at all.
That's right. That's
like a big magnet pulling against a bunch of iron filings. Now they're all pointing right toward the U.S.
That's a very good point. So that we see that certainly today in Iraq, that I think it seems pretty evident that the situation there has really degenerated into
yeah.
chaos, and that we've created a cause for rallying forces against the U.S. And it's amazing. And also in the run up to the war, for example, the alienation of Turkey, for example, the treatment, mm-hmm. the ham-handed treatment of Turkey, and the ham-handed treatment of the other issues
yeah.
in the Middle East.
Yeah.
It's really astonishing. But I just liked his point of view that there was such a wealth of opportunities for a subtle and intelligent form of international policy rather than this jingoism and this, mm-hmm. Predetermined, really, attack on Iraq as being a part of it, I think is very interesting and I think worth discussing.
Yeah, I was listening to Christopher Hitchens this morning on Democracy Now!
I couldn't bear to listen to it because Hitchens has become this self-aggrandizing
yeah.
opportunist,
well,
in my opinion.
I think Tariq Ali did a good job,
he
actually,
did,
against him. But just to comment on that, his points, which, you know, he decided he was for the war back near the beginning. He's originally a liberal guy, but
right.
he eventually sort of, this 9/11 and then this war in Iraq, he became out in favor of the war in Iraq. But the problem I have, and I've mentioned this before, I think I left out, is that even if you accept that getting rid of Saddam Hussein was worth it, and you accept the lies that were told to sell this thing to the public, even if you accept those two. So Hitchens believes it was the right thing to do, to go after Saddam Hussein. I don't know if he believes that telling all the lies that they told was the right thing to do, but let's bypass that. Why would you want the Bush administration to be the agent carrying this out? Because they're just a bunch of, they're so incompetent the way they've carried it out, as this quote implies, that they've managed to do it in a way that makes it absolutely... Well, maybe that's not what this quote is about, but they've done it in a way which just, it's been a disaster.
Right. So that's a point we've often
just
the
tactical
mentioned and left out is that even if you think it's
incompetent.
A good idea, you have to agree that it's a complete botch. And this is, of course, a major election issue. And I think I've often mentioned that even to friends who have conservative points of view who agree with these policies, for example, with the overall idea.
Yeah.
But I don't see how you can support the incompetence. And for that matter, more broadly, even if you are a conservative, I've often said, I mean, these guys are not conservatives. I mean, that's all there is to it. I mean, these guys.
Well, Kerry
are,
brought that up in the debate.
Yeah, that
when
was
Bush
very,
accused
that was
him of being a liberal.
Point.
Kerry came back and said,
"That was
you're
actually
a bash
point.
Of conservatism."
But continuing on this theme of articles and Iraq, there's another article that I would like to call attention to our listeners to, is actually in the Atlantic. Now, I myself have grown rather disgusted with the Atlantic over the last couple of years, and in fact, I've probably been a subscriber to the Atlantic for something like 15 years. Or more, and I've allowed that to lapse. And we don't need to go into all the reasons here, but I've been really not unhappy with it.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I got angry one time.
I've been quite fed up with the Atlantic.
Yeah.
However, having said that, there is an article in this month's Atlantic called "Welcome to the Green Zone: The American Bubble in Baghdad" by, and now I'm not certain about the pronunciation, but I'll do my best. William, it could be Langevische. If it's roughly looks a German name, but however you pronounce his name, he's written a very fascinating article from the point of view of someone who is living in Iraq in the green zone, the so-called green zone, which I can explain in a moment, right from the time of the fall of Baghdad to the present, and is talking about what has been going on there. And The article, so to remind our listeners, the Green Zone is the area in central Baghdad that was previously the seat of Saddam Hussein's government, and which has now been turned into was always walled off, but is now a completely walled off and sealed
sanctuary
area of Baghdad, which is the only part of Baghdad that the Americans are really safe to be in. And even there, they're not safe with recent, in the last month or two, there have now been routine attacks, mortar attacks and bombing attacks and so on, even within the Green Zone. And you may have seen that mentioned there. But the Langevish's article covers really a much longer period of time, starting right from the fall of Baghdad and the initial occupation, and describes, you know, what has been going on there. And I strongly recommend the article. The overall message is one of showing very clearly the failures of the Bush administration's policies, but he's really giving an analysis of from the point of view of someone on the ground of how these failures have come about and what is going on. He's giving a lot of detailed stories.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I mean, the overall message is grim, but within the article, there are a number of stories that he tells in there that are uproariously funny. They are incredibly funny for the degree of incompetence that you cannot fathom amongst the people who have been part of the CPA and now continuing to work under the auspices of the U.S. military and the provisional Iraqi government.
I know.
The article is, in that point of view, I mean, there were times in which I had to put it down and laugh out loud because it is so absurd what is going on. But one of the themes that comes through there
is the theme
that comes through is the way in which various people showed up in the wake of the fall of Baghdad in order to basically demonstrate the superiority of their Republican ideas and the universal applicability and the universal efficacy of so-called free market ideas in the complete absence of any government and legal structure. And of course, it's a good example of the kind of irrational infatuation with the free market,
the simplistic
which is a good thing, which loses track of the fact that it only exists by virtue of a government.
Right.
And if you listen to all the brown shirts on the radio, you know, they act as though somehow the free market exists independently of any government. We should do away with all the government.
It's a law of the universe.
So these clowns show up
like
there
gravity.
In Baghdad. Show up in Baghdad and decide that they're going to institute all of their market methods in an anarchic situation, failing miserably, and then, you know, sort of skulking home with no one except those there in Baghdad being the wiser of what they had done. So it's really very worth reading, very much a very, person-to-person, on-the-ground, individual stories kind of thing, and not a global analysis of international politics, but rather, here's what's actually happening here, and here's the kind of stuff that's going on. So I recommend to our listeners that we check out both of those articles.
There was an article that I read in... let me give the phone number. It's 412-621-9728. Please give us a call if you have anything to say about the topics we're discussing. On campus, it's 89728. This is Left Out on WRCT. So I read an article in Harper's Magazine. I think it's the most recent issue by Naomi Klein, which I think addresses some similar points, although I don't think she lived there for a long time. She did visit Iraq. And one of the points that she made was that among the things that they did there was they have been extremely antagonistic against the industries that existed in Iraq. For example, there's a big concrete industry there. They had many very productive concrete factories in Iraq. And there was a tremendous need for concrete because, to build the walls and barricades around the Green Zone and other areas they were trying to protect, they need these big, huge slabs of concrete that protected against bombs and stuff. And they were trying to avoid using these factories, these Iraqi factories, these state-owned factories. And according to her analysis, the purpose was to drive them out of business so that other companies could get that business.
Yeah.
And it's they were importing concrete slabs from Turkey and stuff for $1,000 a piece instead of $100 a piece that they could have gotten them in Iraq. So the whole kind of
War profiteering
and kind of disregard for the Iraqi, way of doing things.
Yeah.
It just makes them, of course, very angry when they're not getting paid. They're not, huge unemployment. They're shutting down these factories. They're importing concrete from Turkey when it could be built in Iraq for one tenth the price. It's just.
One of the longer stories in Langevish's article is about the traffic code in Baghdad. One of the first acts of the Coalition Provisional Authority was to completely abolish the Iraqi traffic code. And after a few months of this, things had led to absolute chaos. And actually, his description of the kinds of traffic snafus that happened is hilariously funny.
They said you can't drive the way you're used to driving. You have to drive.
No, they just abolished the entire traffic code and they fired all of the traffic police, top to bottom. They fired all of the traffic police because that was part of cleaning out
the Baathist traffic cops.
But it was the mentality really was, you guys are all a bunch of subhuman. You're all subhuman. We don't know how to do anything. We're going to come in and straighten it all out for you. So one of the things that they did was to completely abolish traffic code, completely eliminate all the traffic police, making them unemployed and so on. Okay, that's leave that aspect of it aside. That's something we could complain about as well. But then after months of this and things, the traffic situation becoming completely untenable. And as I mentioned, some of the stories are really very funny as to what actually happens when mm-hmm. there's no traffic code whatsoever. And under those circumstances, then someone from the army came in and got the bright idea that they were going to institute a new traffic code in all of Iraq and Baghdad in particular, and decided to copy the state of Maryland's traffic code. They're going to impose the traffic code from the state of Maryland, but in the absence of there being any judicial or legal system, any context in which it exists. And so the whole thing was a complete absurdity, and it went on for a year, and it finally ended up that, what did they do? They reinstituted the previous traffic code, and it was done by the Iraqis, actually quite deftly, if you see how he describes how they eventually were forced to call in the former traffic police heads, the chiefs of traffic police, and call them in and ask them for help, and they kind of in a very clever manner took over the operation and eventually reinstituted the old traffic code, because their attitude was that I don't understand what problem you are solving here. And Langevisha has a beautiful remark in there in which he says, well, the traffic police looked at their opposite numbers from the CPA, and with the thought which he says occurs to every Iraqi on a regular basis these days, which is, can these truly be the same people who put a man on the moon? So it's quite comical. If it weren't so sad, it's quite comical mm-hmm. to see the kind of absurd things that have been going on, much of which comes from the top. I mean, the attitude of the Bush administration quite clearly is that we know better. You should all shut the heck up. Everyone, the entire world, you can all go F yourselves, according to Dick Cheney, and we'll take charge here because we know what we're doing. Of course, it's manifestly the case that they have no idea what they're doing. And we all, and especially the average Iraqi, is suffering greatly the consequences of it.
Okay, so you can give us a call. There's 5 minutes left in our program. This is Left Out on WRCT. Phone number is 412-621-9728. We have a number of other topics listed on our website, but we're not going to have time for most of them. One topic that came up recently today has gotten a lot of furors being generated by this. There's a company called Sinclair Broadcasting, which owns a whole bunch of television stations around the country. Yeah, and they've got a documentary called Stolen Honor, which was hastily produced by a guy who lives in Pennsylvania. I think he lives near Harrisburg, who was a Kerry hater. And the documentary talks about Kerry's behavior after the Vietnam War, when he came back and was a protester, and now claims that he was responsible for actually prolonging the war in Vietnam, paradoxically. And in general, it's a really electioneering piece. It's just a Kerry bashing piece. In fact, it's illegal to play this on the air, but the Sinclair Broadcasting is insisting that this be shown on all their stations about 2 weeks before the election. And there are two stations in Pittsburgh which are, I think, slated to air this program, the Fox station and another station, a WB station, Channel 21 on cable. And the thing is that the reason it's illegal is because there's a law that says that you're not allowed to air electioneering communication 60 days before an election. Of course, it's only 21 days before the election, and this is clearly electioneering communication, but they're going to air it anyway. Any comments about that?
Well, I guess it's not surprising. We knew a priori that the Bush administration was going to resort to desperate measures because they don't have a positive leg to stand on. I mean, the war, their vaunted war in Iraq is a failure. Their economic policies are a failure. Nothing of any substance they've succeeded on at all. So, of course, it's clear that they will try to get reelected on the basis of a smear campaign. As a kind of a related point, I sort of wish the campaign law applied to it, but it doesn't, and actually I don't. But I do find it quite annoying is that there's a group of Catholic bishops who have announced that they're going to be opposing Kerry on the grounds that he's pro-choice and sending out pamphlets to their parishioners, their parishes, saying that if you vote for any candidate who is pro-choice, that is a sin, and any candidate who is in favor of homosexual marriage, that is a sin, and you're not allowed to vote for these people. So they're trying to influence the election. But interestingly enough, they don't seem to have much concern about starting wars, illegal and immoral wars. That doesn't come up.
That doesn't come up in the list of
capital punishment.
It didn't announce anything about that?
No, this is not a relevant issue. The only relevant issue is
the war is not a relevant issue.
The war is not a relevant issue, according to these bishops. And they're trying to oppose Kerry. So all I can suggest is that you oppose them. Well, I think we're coming to the end of our program for this week. We have we thank again Richard Garwin, who was our guest this week, for a very fascinating conversation in the early part of the show. Today's program was produced by Molly Meyer and Dan O'Neill. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Be sure to listen to Rust Belt Radio in 1 week on alternate Tuesdays. We'll be back in 2 weeks with 1 week to go to the election. Thank you all for listening.
Good night.